From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. On the phone, I have the ninth candidate for the 4th City Council District to call into the hot seat, Tara Bannister. How are you, Ms. Bannister? Thank you very much for calling into the hot seat.
Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning.
It is my pleasure. And I just want to note that Ms. Bannister is the last 4th District candidate that will be calling into the hot seat. The other candidates did not return requests for interviews. In addition, I would like to remind everyone that I am following my election protocol, which means the interviews for the candidates for a particular office will not be posted until all of the candidates for that office who have agreed to be on the program have actually been interviewed, and that I will be asking the candidates the same questions, but I will be asking follow-up questions when I believe they need to be asked. We had some schedule changes, which is why Ms. Bannister is being interviewed now, and why the order of the candidates was not exactly what I said it would be. Now, I have lots of questions and not a lot of time, so without further ado, let's get started. Why did you decide to run for city council?
I decided to run for Los Angeles City Council because I believe our city and our city council need a bigger, bolder, brighter vision of what the city can do and what the city council can do to help our citizens.
In a nutshell, what is your bigger and bolder vision that you think you'd bring to the table or that you have?
Well, let me give you an example of it because it comes down to where the rubber hits the road. For example, instead of just saying that we need green buildings, I actually developed a program that is now used nationwide that created the standards for green buildings. You don't just say to do something, you actually do it. And when we start dreaming of how we can fix these pipes that keep breaking under our streets, we need to start looking at what kind of sonar facilities we can use and start actually talking to the different engineers to say where our system is overused and where we can fix stuff. It's dreaming bigger instead of just fixing problems the way they have been looked at in the past. We take new technologies, new fresh ideas, and do it differently.
When you say you developed the program for green buildings, which program was that so our listeners know?
Actually, there are three different standards, all of which are based on the same meetings that we had over the last 10 years. But I helped develop the lead standards through the U.S. Green Building Council.
And is that through your position as head of the Western United States for the Association of Apartment Buildings?
Well, I am on leave right now from running all operations from the Western 15 states of the National Apartment Association. But actually, that began when I was running the California Apartment Association Los Angeles, which is what I started. I founded that association.
Okay. And so that takes us directly into our next question, which is, what is your present occupation, and why do you believe you are qualified to be a city council member?
Yes, well, my present occupation, as I just said, is, well, actually, I'm on leave from it. So my occupation is working through democracy, running for office at the moment. But for the last 5 years, 6 years, I've run the Western operations for the Western 15 states of the National Apartment Association. So anything to do with developing the standards for apartment maintenance technicians or apartment managers or anything to do with developing the standards for that, plus watching the markets to know what's happening in rental housing and what we need to do to house our citizens. Anything like that is what I have been working on for the last several years, plus so much more. Right after graduating from USC, I actually was in politics and government. I'm senior advisor to former Governor Gray Davis. And then I worked in starting different associations. I was one of the founders of the LA County Business Federation. I founded the California Apartment Association, Los Angeles. I have worked on several other issues for different associations and also helped many entrepreneurs start very successful businesses.
Okay. So I've got two questions, one of which is three questions. If you are unsuccessful in your bid to get past the primary election, would you go back to working for the National Apartment Association?
Well, first of all, I have no intention of being unsuccessful in two weeks on March 3rd. Absolutely no intention whatsoever. My leave paperwork and letter and understanding is I can go back to them if I happen to lose, but I have no intentions of losing.
Okay. And in your post with the National Apartment Association, do you work with and have relationships with politicians? And if so, would you use those to your advantage if you're elected?
Oh, yes. Actually, when you're working on such a vital industry as apartment housing, since apartments house, including myself, I'm a tenant at rent-controlled Park La Brea, and apartments house 60-something percent of Los Angelinos, that it is something that you know quite well, but you also work with Republicans and Democrats. It is an industry that is regulated by local law, county law, state law, federal law. So you work with absolutely everybody, and it's not just a Republican organization or a Democrat organization, because the Democrats care more about low-income housing. They're great giving us the tax credit so we can afford to house people that earn less than others. And sometimes Republicans help eliminate certain regulatory barriers or change tax situations that make it cheaper to run apartments so that you can actually keep rents lower or invest more money in apartments. So, yes, I get to work with everybody.
And you'll use those to your advantage. You'll use those relationships to your advantage if you are elected?
I would say I use those advantages to helping the people of Los Angeles, not necessarily to my advantage. I would work for the people, not just for myself.
Okay. And on your occupation on the ballot, you say in part that you are an educator.
Yes.
In what regard are you an educator?
Well, I educate in general the public and elected officials on rental housing issues. For example, I have spoken about how USP Lusk forecast, how that they talk about in the last forecast September, and how that the role of the incoming millennials into the apartments have changed what we need in apartments. That's something I talk about on a regular basis.
But do you actually teach? Are you a teacher at a school or a professor at a university?
Oh, no. Not a university or school, not at that age level. But, of course, once you graduate from college, most of us never go back. So you have to look at continuing education for the rest of us that graduated when we were 22, but we're now 40 or 50 or 60 or 70, to make sure everybody knows exactly how the world has changed and how it's constantly changing.
Are you presently
and how the industry is constantly keeping up.
Are you teaching at an accredited continuing education facility?
Oh, no. No. Although we do have, and I do teach, for certificate courses. The National Apartment Association is a leading educator for anybody in the rental housing industry. We have an education institute, and we just actually started a new school here in Los Angeles that teaches maintenance technician classes. So I will teach in that. I also teach in the certificate classes for certified apartment manager, national leasing professionals, and so forth.
Okay. And one more question about your occupation, because I have I want to find out your opinion about this. So you got the Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles's endorsement. Do you believe that you should have recused yourself given your relationship or your position with the National Association?
No, absolutely not. That's how you get these endorsements. When people get to know you and they've known you for a long time, that's why you get those endorsements. They learn to trust you.
Okay. And moving on now, the 4th City Council District is very diverse. If elected, how will you get to know each portion of the district and what is important to that specific region?
Well, it's actually very easy to get to know everybody if you're very much a people person. For the last year and a half, I've sat down and spoken on the phone and attended meetings of all bigger groups in all the different parts of, I call it the 11 neighborhoods of CD4, and you get to know those issues. And if you love those people and you love those neighborhoods as you love your own family and your own neighborhood, you get to know and you trust what their issues are in particular. And you learn that what things that separate us are much smaller than the things that unite us. A lot of the same problems in Sherman Oaks versus Silver Lake versus Hancock Park all involve sidewalks or roads or tree trimming. We're all worried about the uptick of property crime. But you look at very different transportation issues or certain needs. And sometimes you have issues such as the Greek Theater, who's managing it, versus the community plan, overlay plan, and Toluca Lake is, they actually like theirs and they want to get it approved compared to Hollywood, it doesn't. It is a very different thing, but it's all about meeting with people.
Okay.
And know them well.
And staying on this topic, what will you do if Sherman Oaks wants something and another portion of the district doesn't, or if there's a citywide traffic mitigation method that, say, Hancock Park supports but Sherman Oaks doesn't, how are you going to decide which way to vote?
Well, first of all, the first thing to do is to bring everybody into the same room and have a conversation about it. because while it is my responsibility and authority to vote on those issues as a city council member, it is I get that authority and responsibility but through the respect of my fellow citizens. So you bring everybody into a room, and you have conversations. And when I say into a room, you can do it physically, you could do it electronically, but through Skype, through video conferencing, by phone calls, you get everybody to know each other and have a good conversation. Now, what are the issues that are going to be different from one part of the city to another part of the city? Sometimes those have to do with something.
I'm not asking about that, though. I'm asking about, hypothetically, how would you decide after everyone's into a room, how would you decide which way to vote on the matter? Would you take a poll, or would you, or how would you weigh which side's view is more important?
That is a very difficult conversation to solve without having a very specific issue. There are more people that live in Sherman Oaks that vote in this race and more people that live there than Las Feliz, but that's not a legitimate way to decide. If traffic is being hurt in Toluca Lake based on something that happens the other side of the hill, but the other side of the hill, let's say it's in Hollywood, is something that they absolutely want and is good for the city, then you have to have an honest conversation if you're going to vote against the people of Toluca Lake. That is something that actually comes down to this specific issue rather than a hypothetical.
Okay, and with that, we're going to take a short music break, and then we will be back with Tara Bannister, candidate for the 4th City Council District. And we are back now with Tara Bannister, the last candidate for the 4th City Council District to call into the hot seat. So, Ms. Bannister, Mayor Garcetti recently announced his Resilience by Design plan that would in part mandate the retrofitting of some older buildings. The City Council recently passed his motion, and according to Luis Reyes, Gil Cedillo's former press secretary, the language of the ordinance is expected in February. However, there are already questions about funding the improvements. Given that there are a lot of older apartment buildings in the Los Feliz area, what are you going to do to make Mayor Garcetti's plan financially feasible for building owners?
Well, actually, that is a question that I am probably the person that will understand this by far the most in the entire city, except for probably Lucy Jones from USGS, because this is something I've worked on in San Francisco, in Napa, in places throughout California along the San Andreas Fault, which obviously goes all the way up to Washington State. It does come down to funding, and I'm going to list off some ways that we can keep the costs lower so the funding is not a big issue. There is such a problem, it's called demand surge. When a product has a certain amount of time that it has to be bought or spent, like if we said these programs have to be implemented within 5 years compared to 10 years, the cost of that product and the service is going to go a lot higher than if they have 10 years to get it done. So I would make sure that we do not have demand surge, which means that somebody's going to have to pay extra costs to get this done. There are several ways that we can go about doing the renovations, and I'm going to take a step back right now and say, obviously, I believe we absolutely positively have to ensure the safety of every resident of the city of Los Angeles, but we do not want to hurt the economic system of today for something that might happen in the future. So, having said that, we keep demand surge and the cost low, make sure that we can...
How are you going to do that, though?
In the ordinance, you say it has to be done with a certain amount of time. You start with, and a certain amount of time is not unreasonably short. You start by saying the largest buildings that could harm the most amount of people, or if it's done, could help the most amount of people, go first. And if those start with buildings that are 250 units and above, then you figure out it's math, it's absolute math, how quickly those can get done, and then you go on to the smaller buildings, which is actually part of what San Francisco did in their ordinance. So you follow those economic principles, and then you start moving slower. The second thing you do is anytime one group is paying more than the other group, for example, the tenants right now, you can charge up to $75 a month. I'm a rent-controlled tenant, and I actually live in one of the buildings we're talking about right now. An extra $75 a month would absolutely change how much money I have to spend on everything else. However, if you charge the landlords 50-50, I guarantee you if you charge the landlords, then the new tenants moving in are going to pay more on their rent, and rents are going to go up in this city. One way, and I made this suggestion officially last week, is that you allow the landlords to be able to take at least a certain percentage of the renovation costs over off on their business taxes, their gross receipt business taxes, over a certain amount of time. Do it over 5 years, do it over 6 years.
Have you looked at the budget implications for that?
Of course. It's actually not as awful as it sounds. Because if it, you, right now, landlords only pay if you're over $100,000 a year for business taxes. That means it's probably for 15, 16 unit buildings and above, and that's probably the same type of buildings that we are talking about, because two stories are very safe if it's a soft first. It's when it gets three stories and above that it's actually not quite as safe. Excuse me. And at three stories and above, they're probably paying a certain percentage of it. But you're a certain percentage. That's not a huge amount of tax, but that would alleviate some of the pressure on charging it to tenants in the future, but it also means that the city would have a dog in this fight to try and keep the cost as low as possible.
Okay, and you at the beginning of your answer, you said you wanted to make sure funding was not an issue. You said it's not an issue. How is it not an issue, and how are you going to prevent it from becoming an issue?
Well, that's exactly what I've been talking about, how we're preventing it not from...
preventing the costs of for business owners, for building owners, and for tenants. I'm talking about how are you going to make sure that the building owners have the capital to be able to do that? Because it's going to take some time, won't it, before the exemptions on business tax receipts accumulate enough so that way they'll have enough capital to actually start these repairs?
No, that's not true, actually. Because you have to go through the valuation and survey process to discover what has to be done. So no matter what you're talking about at this point, because obviously the ordinance will not be passed this quickly, we're looking at doing business taxes up in tax credits up in Sacramento. Obviously that wouldn't even be done until next year. So you're looking at none of these renovations probably even starting for a few years unless the landlord decides to do it all by themselves or if it's mandatory to do to get a loan or so forth for their building for some other reason. So we're not talking about something like this happening this quickly. Maybe 2-3 years down the road, something would start.
Okay. And now moving on, because we are running out of time, two related issues of citywide importance are street services and sidewalks. They are very important to the Valley, too. Some areas do not have any of the latter. If elected, and this is specifically going to be about streets, if elected, what are you going to do to improve streets?
Well, streets in and of itself, one, I believe we should allow every property owner, be it homeowner or business property owner, commercial property owner, should know that they can fix the sidewalks or alleyways, because I consider an alleyway a street, with permits that are no-cost permits. If you're looking at sidewalks, it's 4,200 linear miles of sidewalks that we need to get done. We are not going to get that done quickly unless we allow a lot of people to take care of what's in front of them. Streets, we really need to start looking at streets based on what we need to do the pipes underneath. When you're talking about resiliency, and we were just talking about buildings resiliency for earthquakes, we have major water issues, not just today from pipes bursting. But in case of an earthquake, when the big earthquake happens, we're going to have severe pipe problems. So we need to take care of those underneath before we really address the streets, because why should we waste the money on fixing and resurfacing the streets if we're only going to tear them up in a year or two or four or five to fix the pipes underneath? So that is the first thing we do. But we absolutely, as soon as we do that, need to focus on phasing our streets, and we focus on which streets need it the most, that have the most amount of traffic per day, per month. Those streets should be fixed first. Obviously, There's certain places that need cement, along the curbsides and where buses go. Those are some of the first streets that need to, the cement carries a heavier weight, and while it's more expensive, cement lasts 75 years. So we need to look at this as a life cycle cost, as well as what we can fix quickly and what makes sense to fix for the long term compared to do it as piecemeal as we have. The city controller, Ron Galper, put together a very good evaluation of what has been going wrong and how we can fix it. If we take that plan and examine it and address this as a problem that needs solving, not just a political issue to deal with, I think we'll all be in better shape financially as well as on our streets, driving our streets.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Ms. Bannister, and thank you very much for calling into the Hot Seat today. It was a pleasure. The Hot Seat After Hour starts right now.
You can
email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat newsletter by clicking on the link on our page. Go to annenbergradio.org/podcasts and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. This interview concludes my series of interviews with the candidates running to replace the termed out Tom Labonge on the city council, which is for District 4. Remember to vote on March 3rd if you did not vote by mail.